What if Reading win the playoffs? Well, it's that question that we were perhaps contemplating a little bit more a few weeks ago than we are now, after Reading have dropped points twice this week with defeat to Birmingham and a draw with QPR. But alas, we on the Tarless Den podcast for episode 258 are going to take a little bit of a detour before we analyse the week's action, which, let's face it, is not really the best action, is it? Welcome to, as I say, the Tarless Den podcast, episode 258, the podcast by Reading fans for Reading fans. I'm your host, Mark Mayo, and joining me for a little bit of a different show this week, it's a triumphant return, in fact. Dave Handbags Harris, when was the last time we had you on?
All right, I couldn't tell you, mate. It's good to be back. I'm all brewed up, ready to go with my Tarless Den mug. So looking forward to this.
Beauty. There's a lot of that. It's very on brand, this show. We've just had about 2 minutes of completely out of nowhere technical bodgings, so that's set us into the classic straights, I suppose. And Ollie Allen also joining me this week. How's it going, mate?
Yeah, I'm very well, I think. I'm slightly less positive than I perhaps was a week ago, but yeah, very pleased to be on.
Yeah, we will be discussing the games in the week in the mailbag, as we've asked you to send in your questions as normal, but we'll have a bit more of a pub chat than a recap to start us off. And before we do that, I wanted to give a couple of shout outs to some projects that we've been working on recently outside of the Tarless End, if I can be so blasphemous and detour away for a little second. Personally, I've been working on a new podcast series called Why Bother Podcast. For the first series, we're focusing on Britain's smallest political parties. It's something completely different to football and sport and everything. And really, it's just something for me to kind of scratch a bit of a different itch. And hopefully it's still something worth listening to an extent. So we'll put up a link to that after the show, just in case that's the sort of thing that tickles your fancy. And Handbags, you've also been working on something as well, haven't you?
I have, yeah. So I've started a new podcast called Terrace Memoirs. First episode was out on Thursday the 18th, I think it was. With Jamie Butler, it's all very much a work in progress. It's basically a podcast designed to allow fans of all clubs, not just Reading Football Club, to basically tell their football supporting story. Next episode, it's going to be weekly. Next episode is out on Thursday coming. The 25th, I think it is. Look out for it. Hopefully it's enjoyable. And all feedback is welcome.
Absolutely, same here. So just a nod towards something a little bit different. As Handbag says, Terrace Memoirs, a bit more of a fan-led thing of all colours. And for myself, Why Bother Podcast, with the first series focusing on the life and the work of Britain's smallest political parties. But let's get on then to do some Reading chat and a bit of a different pub chat this week.
Be loud and be proud and back the boys and make some noise. Come on, you Oz!
Shout out to this week's podcast sponsor, ZCZ Films, showing that age is no barrier to being a hooly hoop.
I'm going to be a bit heinous again and talk about a different podcast, because I was listening to the history podcast, The Rest is History, this week, and they did a very good episode on counterfactuals and what-if scenarios, and basically how much merit we have in terms of discussing other, you know, major events over history and how the course of history would have been affected had they gone slightly differently. And I was thinking, well, you know, if Reading win this week and we have a lot of good stuff to talk about, then I'll do a normal podcast. But if we don't, and it's a bit dreary, and, you know, last week we were talking about a 1-1 draw, and this week you got another 1-1 draw to talk about, let's kind of take a bit of a detour and do something a bit different. And I was thinking we could do some what-ifs and talk about that. Now, Handbags, I know that recently you won the Elm Park Wars podcast and did a series on this of fairly similar nature. So obviously, if you want more of what we're about to discuss, then that's a place to go and listen to that. But let's start off with, let's just cover a few different topics and decide how much of an impact this truly had on Reading's history. And the first one that I wanted to start with is one that I've always felt had a huge impact, not just on Reading's history, but on perhaps global football history. And that is Danny Murphy's header landing in the back of the net in the final game of the 07-08 season. And obviously that meant that Reading were relegated, meant that Fulham stayed up. And I'll get the ball rolling then. And Ollie, if you want to kind of judge how much realism you think my judgment on this is, that basically if Reading stay up that year and Fulham go down, I kind of have faith that Reading would have turned into a bit of a Stoke stayed around for a few years, Roy Hodgson would have gone off and perhaps not been such a big influence on the Premier League as he's been, or maybe had that delayed a little bit. Potentially wouldn't have become England manager. Steve Coppell, however, would have been a big influence on the Premier League for the next few years. Maybe Steve Coppell becomes England manager. I feel like that goal might have sent us into a very different course of history.
Yeah, I mean, if Sir Steve had been England manager over Roy Hodgson, then that would have saved everyone an awful lot of pain at multiple tournaments, particularly Euro 2016. But yeah, it was a strange one. Obviously, you know, we didn't. I certainly had the feeling throughout that season, I get the impression that a lot of the players from that Reading side did as well, that they almost felt as if they were almost too good to go down. And I know, speaking to Kevin Doyle for an interview for the Tyler Stand a few years ago, that there was almost a sense of complacency that they'd done so well, obviously, in the two seasons before. You know, almost, I still stand by the fact that I think 06-07 is a better achievement than winning the league with 106 points. The fact that they finished eighth and were only a point or whatever it was off finishing or qualifying for Europe, sorry. And then just that dip in that second season, obviously the stereotype second season syndrome, but there was almost a sense that, you know, that side was too good to go down that year. And obviously, yeah, it comes down to that final day. And, you know, whenever I see Danny Murphy on Match of the Day or Football Focus, there's still that almost burning hatred up inside me for that header. But yeah, there was certainly the basis there for Reading to go and build themselves to cement themselves in the top flight. Obviously, it was sort of an era in the Premier League where the Premier League was starting to go properly global. You know, you sort of had the era in the 90s where Italian football was sort of leading the light in Europe, but sort of that late 2000s was when the Premier League was really starting to take off. And question marks perhaps from my point of view of whether John Medeski would have quite had the funds to properly keep Reading in that division. But I mean, you know, there were plans to expand Medeski if Reading stayed up for, you know, five seasons or so. And yeah, look, as I say, I don't think it had a massive effect, obviously, on long-term on Reading, because we obviously ended up, you know, getting back up fairly quickly within sort of four seasons or so, and we wouldn't have had the joys of 11-12 and, you know, perhaps not even the FA Cup runs that followed in those next couple of years if we hadn't have gone down that season. So yeah, it's a strange one, but yeah, I think probably it's affected the wider football context rather than Reading specifically.
I think, Handbags, we probably still have Danny Murphy as a pundit on Match of the Day, which maybe makes this the consequences somewhat limited in terms of our benefits anyway.
I think certainly from that point of view, yeah, I think he ends up wherever he ends up. And Danny Murphy was a Premier League midfielder, so yeah, he would have inevitably ended up somewhere else and kept his name in the spotlight. I think going back to 2008, if we had stayed up, I think unquestionably the club would have learned from the previous season where they didn't invest. Having lost that midfield dynamo, Steve Sidwell, and not, you know, fully replacing him, there's no question that the club would have had to invest in the squad. There were a lot of players that had their heads turned as well, the likes of Leroy Lita after his epic form in the second half of 06-07 and the Euro under-21s championship. You had Nicky Shorey, who I'm convinced is still having his medical at West Ham. There were a number of players who'd had their heads turned, thought that they were perhaps better than they actually were individually. Didn't put in the graft for whatever reason, and it cost us in the end. But you know, you've got to look back to that season and think that in sort of December, January time or late December, we were comfortably, you know, fairly comfortably mid-table. And then went on that horrible eight defeats in a row. And, you know, just dropped like a stone from that point onwards. And it was, you know, it was horrible to watch. But if we had just managed to scrape ourselves clear of relegation and Fulham, you know, maybe if we'd have beaten Derby by 7 goals or if Fulham hadn't got that winner, then I think, you know, you're right, we would have ended up having probably a multiple seasons, if not quite as many as, say, Wigan or Stoke. I think they had 8 seasons each in the Premier League. Perhaps, you know, sort of like Bournemouth or like Hull were before the Lambs took over. So, the club would have learned. I think Medeski would have learned. Whether or not Steve Coppell would have still been in charge, who knows? But you know, from Fulham's perspective, they wouldn't have had their Europa League final. You know, say Roy Hodgson wouldn't have managed Liverpool, he probably wouldn't have managed England. And yeah, it would have been obviously a very, very different path of history.
Yeah, I think for Reading as well, you've got to. I mean, you said about Lee Walita. We spoke to Lee Walita a few months ago, and that interview's online now. And he kind of, I think, he's Aston Villa. He kind of suggested win for him, and he said the same. That he said that he thinks a lot of players should have been allowed to leave, and that turnover should have happened early. And maybe that turnover would have happened in the summer. Maybe a couple would have left. In that case, I think the impact is minimised because we probably would have gone for another manager, maybe gone down, maybe the McDermott stuff happens anyway. So for each of these, I want to kind of have a little bit of a rating in terms of where is the sat here now. And obviously with the course of history being changed on a rating of out of 10, then how much do we think that this really changed the course of Reading history? I'm willing to say that this is probably a 6 out of 10 change. What do you think, Ollie?
Yeah, I'd go around the same place. As I say, it's probably got a bigger effect on the wider football history, so to speak, rather than Reading specifically. So yeah, I might even go 5, to be honest, I think.
Handbags?
Yeah, it's fair to middling. I'd go, yeah, somewhere between 5 and 6. Let's go 6. Let's just be, yeah, right in the middle.
So Steve Coppell, England manager, not something we're all fully invested in. The next one then, Hamags, this is one you said about the Nicky Forster being injured against Wolves in the 2002-2003 playoff semi-final. Obviously, the scenario there is that Reading go up, promoted to the Premier League for the very first time, back-to-back promotions as well, under Alan Pardew. And I think, you know, I kind of joked about the Steve Cup one, but this is one I genuinely think had a big impact on Reading's history, because ultimately, if you go up, yes, Alan Pardew might be going anyway after a year or so as a young up-and-coming manager. Whether Reading can stay up for more than a season, I think, is debatable. But I think if this happens, you don't get 05-06, you don't get the 106 season, and maybe Reading, you know, found their way back up or whatever eventually. But to take out that season out of Reading folklore and you know, the things that came after, I think that's a huge change on the mantra of the club.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, you take a look at the incident in isolation and just that individual game. We were well on top against Wolves and should have been probably leading by more than the one goal that we were. And then Forster gets injured and the tide just completely changes, because he was so pivotal to the way that we played with the one up top. And, you know, Jamie Cureton, as good as he was, just wasn't the same player in that system. But if we'd have, you know, perhaps if we, who knows what would have happened in the final with Sheffield United, maybe, you know, history would have dealt us a kind hand and we'd have gone up, beating them in the final. I mean, Sheffield United stunk the place out in the end after the season that they had. They were certainly the best of the also-rans, I think, that season, with Leicester and Portsmouth going up. But yeah, with from a Reading perspective, if Forster stays fit, then certainly we give it a good crack of the whip. And you're right, you know, we history does take a completely different turn for the football club, and we don't have any of the bits and pieces that we saw 3-4 years later. Because perhaps we're in the Premier League a lot sooner. Who knows, again, whether or not we'd have been good enough to stay up. We might have surprised a few people, you know. Who knows whether or not we'd have invested fully, certainly as heavily as we possibly could have done. I think Alan Pardew would have been certainly a lot more... what's the word I'm looking for?
Tired?
Yeah, in terms of the transfer market, he would have been... a lot more forceful in the transfer market, a lot more ambitious. That's the word I'm looking for, ambitious in the transfer market than perhaps Steve Coppell was. And, you know, because you look at what he did in League Two, John Solarco at League Two, Division Two, as it was, with the likes of John Solarco, former England international. Yeah, all right, we signed Kevin Watson as well, who had gone up with Rotherham. He was more prone to signing players from clubs that more successful players, really, wasn't he? And spending a bit of money once in a while, you know. So you take a look at the likes of Martin Butler, they were doing well at Cambridge, but the money was there, and it wanted to spend the money to improve the team as and when he needed to. McCoffell wasn't necessarily into that. So perhaps we would have spent bigger. We perhaps would have been a successful, comparatively successful Premier League team for a few years, a lot earlier, and maybe spent a few more years in the Premier League as a result of that. The Forster injury, I think, definitely changed history in a big way.
Yeah, and I think, Ollie, for where we're sat now, because it's getting on for 20 years ago now, I suppose, in terms of Reading's position now. The problem is with all these what-ifs is that Reading are ultimately the size of club that is just about, you're pretty much safe for where we're sat now anyway. So for going back and thinking about how this really changes us, if you take away, let's say this does take away the 05-06 season and the Coppell and the 106, how important do you think that is to the kind of club's identity almost and the culture, and how, if you take that away, what are we kind of left with, I suppose?
Yeah, massively. The first thing that people think of when they think of Reading, you'd hope, is that 106 season. We still chant about it. We still have, that's one of our very few unique chants, still in the modern era. Is we've got the record 106, and it's such a fantastic achievement. It's the club's greatest ever achievement in many ways, and the fact that record has still stood, 15 years on is incredible. And sort of the memories that were created during that season, the players that made a name for themselves, if you wipe that from history, so many of those players, don't go down in sort of folklore in Reading folklore, and who knows where Reading themselves would be. I think certainly the last 20 odd years since that playoff campaign in 2002-2003, I think that the 20 years since then, we have sort of established ourselves now as a championship team, because really for the majority of Reading's history and throughout the 20th century, Reading were a third division, a fourth division side, and really sort of since the turn of the 21st century, obviously a few years before that as well, but Reading are now properly a side you think of as a championship side. We spent three seasons in the Premier League, and really that's been cemented by the last 20 years. Fans of a older ilk, we'll still think of Reading as sort of a third division side, but these last 20 years, have cemented ourselves as sort of in these top two tiers.
Definitely. I'm going to go for an 8 for this one. Any advances on an 8 out of 10 in terms of changing, how we see the club today?
I'd knock it back a stretch. I'd go for a 7, personally. Certainly changed history significantly, but, ultimately, we're still at the same level as where we were when it first happened. And yeah, all right, it was the first season, but we haven't looked back, put it that way, really.
Yeah, I'd tend to agree. I mean, obviously, in the fact that if we had gone up that year, then 05-06 wouldn't have happened. Obviously, yeah, that's massive. But yeah, as Dave says, we are ultimately pretty much in exactly the same position as we were during that time. So yeah, I'd go for a 7, I think, yeah.
Cool. Well, let's do the 1995 playoff final win then, or if we turn it into a win, I should say. Obviously, that defeat to Bolton, again, that's the sense of getting the club to the Premier League earlier, a lot earlier. And really, this is one that I'm going to say has no real long-term difference on the club, because where the club ended up 4 years later, for example, I don't think that necessarily changes if Reading get promoted in 1995, because the team, perhaps it's certainly the money-wise and everything, but if competed, I'd probably say no, just off, I wasn't really able to be a fan at that time. But I think that looking back and everything, how the team went afterwards, I probably say wouldn't have lasted very long in the Premier League. Medeski Stadium wasn't built then. Elm Park would have had to have been turned into seats, which would have made it not a very intimidating stadium, that's to say the least. And really, I think if you let Reading go up that year and then they get knocked back down, then they probably could well fall into League One anyway. The Medeski Stadium probably gets built maybe a little bit earlier, might even be a little bit worse. But then if you put the club in terms of, where it was in, I think the club's in the same position basically in the year 2000, let alone in the year 2021. I mean, Ollie, for as another fan who probably a bit too young for memories or being around for this, then I'm not sure whether there is a huge difference this one has.
Yeah, I mean, I will point out I wasn't even born at this point. But I mean, in terms of, you know, obviously it's the first of four playoff final defeats, and you know, who knows, if we win that first one, then maybe we don't have the heartbreak for the following three, and it doesn't set off that horrible trend that has happened since. But yeah, as you say, you know, it's almost the same as the last example, is that Reading are, you know, even, you know, what is it now, 27 years on, is it? Or 26. We are still in that same position that we are, towards the top end of the second tier, in and around the playoffs, looking to get into the Premier League. So, yeah, I can't comment too much on sort of, you know, the context of the time. As I say, I wasn't there, but, you know, we are in a similar sort of position. And again, if we go up then, do the things that happen later happen. So yeah, I mean, the whole concept of this talk is maybes and ifs, but it does seem as if, you know, we are pretty much in the same place 25 years on.
Handbags, if I give this one a 2 out of 10, what do you think about that?
I think that's a little bit disingenuous. I mean, a couple of things that I'd point out is that, yeah, so, you know, Elm Park ultimately wasn't really, certainly wasn't geared up for Premier League football, was it? But if we stayed there, then it was possible to obtain dispensation to retain terracing, provided you can demonstrate, and I think this still stands, provided you can demonstrate that a new stadium is on the way. There were strong feelings, strong rumours, shall we say, of the need to ground share as well if we did get promoted. This was the specific topic that I spoke to Paul on Elm Park Royals. This was the one that I covered, and I think you know, we probably would have ended up ground sharing. Perhaps it was QPR that was the most often quoted ground that we would have been at. But certainly, I think it would have sped up the process of obtaining the ground, the land for building the Medeski, I think we would have ended up with the Medeski a lot quicker. But not only that, financially, the club would have been in a much better place. I mean, can't forget that even back then, Medeski was putting in tens of thousands of pounds a week to cover the losses at the football club. And of course, he wouldn't have necessarily had to do that, but we would have been in a much better place. We certainly would have kept, if not, you know, if for a season, then Xhaka, Simon Osborne, Scotty Taylor, you know, Ady Williams left at the end in 96. So he stayed with us for another year, but we would have kept the bulk of those players. Would we have competed? Well, you only got to take a look at what Bolton did in 95, 96 in the Premier League, and they didn't really compete at all. I'm not sure how many wins it was in the single figures that they got. And bearing in mind that they were still at Burnham Park then, but you know, they ended up with the Reebok as it was then, a lot quicker than anticipated. And that was partly as a result of that playoff final win. So, you know, paths would have perhaps crossed a lot differently. Or carried on a lot differently, sort of almost mirror image, as it were. Reading following the Bolton path, albeit with Sir John Medeski at the top end, rather than Phil Gartside. You know, we all know what's happened with Phil Gartside and the financial issues that Bolton have had for years now as a result of that overspending in the Premier League. Certainly John Medeski wouldn't have done that. And I think we would have been, you know, it took us 10 years to recover from that in many ways, because we weren't able to compete really in Division One as it was. We ended up in relegation battles in the next three seasons. Moved to the Medeski on the back of a relegation. We wouldn't have moved into the Medeski in Division Two. We would have moved to Medeski at least in Division One, I think. And as I say, history would have been quite different. But again, ultimately, you know, referring back to the previous one, the Nicky Forster one. Again, yes, infrastructure-wise, the club is in a very different place. The league itself, we're in a similar place. But to say that it was almost inconsequential, I think, is a bit disingenuous. And I'd go for at least a 5 or a 6, I think, on this one.
Well, the reason I go for a 2 or 3 or something is purely because that when teams have gone down, if we were to have gone down in the Premier League, they have not. Those teams that went down in the 90s have kind of struggled, like Sheffield Wednesday, Nottingham Forest. They have found it difficult to come back. And obviously Reading, you know, if they're in Division 1, as you say, for a bit longer than into the Medeski, then who knows. But I feel like the teams that did sort of start to come out of the league, Premier League in the 90s, weren't in the best shape and did struggle. And ultimately, I think the time, it's certainly true that there's never been a better time to be relegated from the Premier League than now. And perhaps the problems out of that would be a bit bigger. Ollie, I don't know if you throw a number at this one.
I'd probably guess somewhere sort of between the two, maybe a 4, I think. I agree, obviously, it was more difficult to bounce back, I suppose, into the Premier League in the 90s than it is now. So I'll go 4.
Well, let's bring it a bit more recent then. And this is the kind of last one, I would say. We've got 2 more after this, but kind of the last one of on this theme. And this is the Reading win the playoff final in 2017. Obviously, the other 2 playoff finals were lost. We got promoted the year after, so probably a little bit more negligible. But for this one, the Yap Stam Huddersfield final. And really, the question for me is, if we go up, does Stamball finally kick in and become the, you know, the all dynamic, encompassing playing style that hopefully, you know, we thought it was going to be at the time? And I'd certainly say that there'd be the money for it. I'd certainly say that the chances of Yap Stam making it work in the Premier League were pretty decent. Perhaps it actually ends up, I was thinking this earlier, maybe if Yap Stam, with his stature, might not have stuck around that often. Maybe when Jose Mourinho gets sacked for Man United, they turn to Yap Stam instead, which would have been quite a different course of history. But handbags for this one, Reading financially was certainly in a position in 2017 to actually go and make some things happen in the Premier League. And as I said, this last 5-10 years has definitely been the time to be in the Premier League financially. So it might actually have a bit of a big change.
Yeah, I'm in 2 minds with this one, simply because we saw what potentially could happen with Stamball. With some of the results that we had at Norwich and Fulham and Brentford and the like in the league, where we just were absolutely crushed because we were just so open. But that was with, you know, a championship squad, with a squad of players that were, you know, pretty much brand new and put together by Stam, under the Thai ownership, I hasten to add. We can't forget that. Our current owners, they took over. It was announced that they'd taken over in the middle of the Fulham playoff semi-final, wasn't it, in the second leg?
Yeah.
So, you know, we certainly would have had the money to throw at it from ownership point of view and from club point of view, and perhaps it might have. If only for a season, perhaps, before it was found out by Premier League teams, then it might have actually worked. Who knows? Certainly, if Christopher Schindler misses his penalty and we go on to win it, it would have been interesting to have seen how we did. I don't think I mean, Huddersfield gave it a good go for 4 or 5 months, didn't they? But I don't think we would. I think we would have given a better fist of it over the long run than Huddersfield, perhaps. But it's certainly this one really because it's more recent. It changes there's not a lot of recent history to sort of look at in terms of the long term effect, is there? So this one, I think, you know, with that caveat, again, I'd give it an 8. I think because it certainly would have changed the very recent history quite big time for the club.
Yeah, I'd probably go for an 8 as well, because I think that, you know, the as you say, the problem is perhaps in terms of Reading compared to Huddersfield. I think Huddersfield's squad was a bit older than ours, a bit less. I'd probably say our team probably had just more bit more Premier League style talent. They had more Championship style talent, if you like. And the likes of John Swift, Liam Kelly, since then they've not gone on to become Premier League quality players. And Yap Stam himself has not gone on to, you know, he's had some good jobs since and not really taken the chances, as you could say. So I think that there is a chance that these things will go and click and everything. And certainly, you know, we've spent the last 4 years in pretty miserable straits, let's face it. And we've spent a lot of that time worrying financially. And if we had to come back down, that financial problem of FFP and everything is still there. But Ollie, I suppose that just the sheer cash that you get from being promoted in that final, Huddersfield have come back down and they're settled into lower mid-table, but I don't think there's any sense that they're kind of like going bankrupt or anything. And at least for Reading, that'd be a huge burden lifted.
Yeah, and that was the argument that I made at the time. I know there's a lot of talk during that 16-17 season where we were sort of, you know, occasionally getting beaten heavily, as Dave says, at Norwich and at Fulham and stuff like that. And there was a, you know, real sort of talking point, I seem to remember, amongst the fan bases, that were we ready to get into the Premier League? And I think for me at the time, that argument was almost null and void because of the financial reward that being in the Premier League can give. You know, the playoff final is described as the richest game in football, with good reason. And as you say, you look at the troubles that Reading have gone through financially. Obviously, we are fine in terms of the money that Dijon has, but in terms of FFP, you know, we'd be fine, you know, sort of making a profit and stuff like that. You know, I'd point out that Ron Gourlay was, you know, still likely to be appointed CEO, and Reading's recruitment would have still gone through him, and whether that would have quite worked in the Premier League, you know, who knows? But yeah, just for that cash reward alone, and the fact that it would have stabilised Reading in many ways for the next decade or so, really, you know, as you say, you know, Huddersfield haven't done an awful lot on the pitch since coming back down to the Championship, but they're certainly not sort of in danger of, you know, going bankrupt or anything, you know, whereas we've made a loss of, what is it, £20 million in the last financial year, and, you know, about £15 million the year before that. So you have to look at that as a turning point. And as you say, on the pitch, you know, it's been really, really poor performances. You know, we came incredibly close to dropping out of the division at the other end only the season after that playoff final. So yeah, I think it probably is a bit difficult to look at it because it is so recent and because of what we've had since. But yeah, for me, I think I still almost wonder almost daily what would have happened if we'd gone up on that Wembley afternoon. And it's just heartbreaking to think that, you know, we still haven't won any of those playoff finals. And I think for me, probably as a younger supporter, that's the one that hurts the most. You know, I've only seen two playoff finals in terms of the one against Swansea and the one against Huddersfield. And as you say, the one against Swansea is made slightly easier by the fact we went and won the league title the following season. But based off what's happened since the 2017 final, it's quite tough to take.
Yeah, would you say an 8, or would you go higher than 8 then?
I'd be happy with an 8, yeah.
Fair. Well, I think we've got one now, and what I've kind of learned from historical what-ifs and counterfactuals is that basically they tend to focus on dystopian futures because it kind of makes us feel of, you know, it shows what we have. And I suppose that's not really what we've done so far, although the idea of ground sharing with QPR or Ron Gourlay coming in does make me kind of question as to whether it's worth winning these playoff finals. But this one really is, I suppose, it is probably the dystopian one potentially, because this is John Medeski never buying the football club. And Handbags, I wanted to ask whether you think that there's any sense that the kind of Thames Valley Royals idea might have popped up since. But before that, I would say that there's kind of two scenarios here. The first one is that the club just goes bankrupt and we have a pretty big town with a National League South team. Or perhaps more likely that we have a kind of bumbling along at an Oxford level, you know, fourth tier in the 90s and into the noughties. And the fact is that Reading became a boom town in the noughties and late 90s. And that might well have, in, you know, created a sense that a very, very wealthy owner in that period might have come in, and then God knows what happens, because Medeski, you know, wealthy only, yes, but not in the like Man City levels. And I wondered if the town could have attracted that sort of character. But Handbags, firstly, as I said, that would there have been a sense that maybe like a Thames Valley Wars things might have come back if Medeski wouldn't have bought the club?
I think we can crush that one straight away. I mean, that was absolutely rejected by supporters of both Oxford United and Reading back in 1982. All right, it was Robert Maxwell's baby, and a lot of the shareholders at Reading were pro it. But yeah, I don't think there's any way in which, certainly back then, a club like that, you know, two clubs merging in English football, could have made that go ahead. It would have been roundly rejected.
Again, in terms of the size of the club for all the sort of, you know, decades on and stuff then?
Well, and you've got to remember again, under Roger Smee, yes, Roger Smee was one of the ones that that saved us from in Thames Valley Royals. Unfortunately, back in the late 80s and early 90s, the club was losing money hand over fist and needed that benevolent owner to take them over. But back in the late 90s, up until recently, with the demise of Bury, they were the last the early 90s. That was the last time that we saw football clubs going bust in the Football League. We saw Aldershot, of course, and Maidstone United, both going bust. And it's distinctly possible that Reading could have gone the same way, and we would have ended up having probably. If that did happen, then I think it's inevitable that we would have had a feeder club, with perhaps, you know, whether or not Elm Park would have been sold off by receivers or whatever. Aldershot were lucky that they managed to keep the recreation ground, but you know, say whether or not Elm Park, because Elm Park was owned by the club, whether or not it would have been sold off for housing development 7 or 8 years sooner than it actually was. So we probably could have ended up going down to Scours Lane or up to Small Mead a lot earlier. Who knows what could have happened. But yeah, certainly if John Medeski didn't take the club over, then the future was pretty bleak for the football club. We might have made it work. You know, we might have had a new owner come in that was able to ensure a reasonable degree of stability. But, you know, who knows whether or not that person would have been as rich as Sir John was, or as John as he was back then. And able to fund the move to the new stadium. Difficult to say. But I think the one thing that we can say is that we were incredibly lucky to end up with John Medeski as our owner, and certainly for so long. And the amount of progress that we made, both on and off the pitch, under his stewardship is quite phenomenal, really. And I'm not sure there are too many people out there who would have been able to do that. So it would be, yeah. If we could go to another sort of a parallel universe with a different story, it'd be good to be a fly on the wall in that universe, just to see what might have happened.
Well, I would firmly put this in the category of a dystopian alternative history, because really for Reading as a town, and I suppose this is the thing, Ollie, is that for Manchester, let's say Man United have an alternative history where they don't turn into a good team and all that sort of stuff. Manchester was a northern industrial town, was a footballing hotbed, and Lancashire was a footballing hotbed, much more than Reading's ever been a footballing hotbed. So there were plenty of big southern towns and, you know, even cities, places like Oxford and Bath, that don't have a good football team, or certainly a team at our level. So I suppose there is nothing inevitable about Reading having a team this size, is there? And I give this a full-on 10 out of 10, because John Medeski was the man who made it happen, and at the right time as well.
Yeah, completely agree. I think the Reading Football Club of today looks very, very different, or perhaps doesn't even exist at all without John Medeski. You know, that he has shaped, I mean, obviously the last sort of 5 years have been shaped by changing ownerships and CEOs and stuff like that, but Medeski has shaped the way that the club looks. You know, the the stadium is the obvious one, but you know, the academy as well. You know, he pumped an awful lot of money into that, and the success that that has gone on to have since, you know, with 60 plus graduates or whatever it is now, he played a massive part in getting that off the ground. You know, the 05-06 season wouldn't have happened without John Medeski, you know, off the pitch. You know, you talk about the town, you know, it's not just the club that he's had an impact on, it's the town as a whole. You know, the John Medeski Academy, I think he put around £2 or 3 million into that, and has massively sort of improved the opportunities for young people in Reading. And yeah, look, there is no man more influential in Reading Football Club's history than John Medeski. I think that's the simplest way of putting it. You know, the Reading way, you know, that has become so synonymous and that is talked about a lot, is pretty much the John Medeski way. You know, he made that happen. He has shaped, you know, how Reading Football Club do, or certainly did, perhaps not the last couple of years, but certainly did, business for 20, 25 years. So yeah, look, we're forever indebted really to Sir John Medeski. I think he turns 80 later this month, and just, yeah, what an incredible impact he had, or he has had, on the football club.
Well, I think, I mean, speak now or forever hold your peace, but I think we're fair to give that a round of 10 out of 10s to Sir John. And really, and yeah, as I say, there is so many different things that can happen with these things, but the most likely things that can happen don't tend to be very good if Sir John doesn't come in. So as ever, as you say, indebted is totally the word. And let's end this conversation then by bringing it right back into the present and the what if Reading do or don't go up this season. And we'll get into the mailbag in a little bit and answer some questions in terms of the likelihood of this happening. But, you know, we're at a bit of a crossroads at the moment. We are in the playoffs. The form, if you look at how Reading's form is doing compared to other teams generally at the moment, I think we are actually sixth in the form table over the last six games. So we're not in a disastrous scenario, but we're not in a particularly brilliant scenario in terms of our comfort with being sixth in the table. But I think, Ollie, that on the one hand, you've got those teams, certainly in the last few years, you've got a lot of teams that have failed to go up through the playoffs and they've actually come back and done really well. Brentford, Swansea, Fulham, Villa have all managed to do it. I think West Brom got knocked out of the playoffs one year and then came back and went up, didn't they? So it's very plausible. But are Reading in that bracket of clubs that, like Brentford and Swansea, that are so well run, and like Fulham and Villa that have loads of money and the players effectively already there to do it? So if you were to say for next season, if Reading fail to go up, Ollie, where's your faith in terms of whether Reading, you know, kind of stay in that promotion bracket or drop down?
Yeah, I mean, it's really tough because I remember, you know, that 2017 playoff final and thinking that, you know, we got some really solid foundations here to go and give it a good shot the following year. And I suppose probably the, you know, 2011 was in the back of people's minds where we lost the final and went and won the title. But and then obviously we had that horror season afterwards with Stan going and coming in. But yeah, it's really tough. And I think probably one of the main reasons, you know, we didn't really talk about it, but in the 2017 playoff final chat, was that Ali Alapsi and Danny Williams left, and that, you know, and Reading never really properly replaced them in the team. And I suppose that's probably the worry going into this summer. If we don't go up, that players leave. You know, Omar Richards is, you know, supposedly on his way out to Bayern Munich. You know, Lucas Jarre, I'm sure, will get a lot of suitors. Michael Olise is probably likely to depart, whether we go up or not. So I think it all depends on how Reading either A, keep the squad together in the summer, or replace any players that leave. They're probably is perhaps a slight concern as well with finances. Again, you know, Dae Young has plenty of money, but, you know, how close are we to sort of, you know, with these FFP regulations? You know, the club's accounts will come out in the next couple of months. We still don't quite know what the EFL are doing in terms of any sort of easing of sanctions for the pandemic. So there's a lot of ifs and buts, and, you know, that's perhaps not the best place to be in, that it is quite up in the air. You know, I don't quite have the same amount of trust as a club like Brentford, that who are incredibly well run, and again with Swansea, who are, they're both very well run clubs with a clear structure in place and clear foundations. And I unfortunately don't quite get that exact same sense with Reading. You know, we've got some very, very good players. It's a very strong squad, perhaps not quite big enough at the moment. You know, Panovic has done fantastically well in this first season, but it doesn't particularly strike me as that sort of club, as Brentford, as Swansea, that have those foundations in place to just go at it again and again. And certainly with Brentford, less so with Swansea, there is almost an inevitability that Brentford will go up to the Premier League at some point. And sadly, I don't quite get that same feeling with Reading, I don't think.
No, I understand what you mean. And I think it is that financial aspect again. And if we do, you know, Omar Richards is going to go and we won't financially benefit from that at all, really. But if Elise goes, if Xiao goes, at the very least, you'd think we'd be able to turn that into some potentially wise spending. Handbags, to round off this chat, I'm going to give you the opposite scenario. What if Reading go up this season? What sort of position do you think the club are in to fight a Premier League campaign next season with Paunovic, with the young players? You know, again, we kind of lose Richards, but this squad otherwise is pretty much intact. What's the optimism if we can pull it off this year?
Well, reasonably optimistic. I mean, Paunovic, his brand of football seems to be a lot more stable than our previous attempt at promotion under Jaap Stam. Seems to be a much more solid base, and particularly with the likes of Renan Hotter and Laurent there, with Liam Moore, Michael Morrison at the back there. So I think we'd give a reasonable fist of it. I think absolutely there's no question that we keep Michael Elise at least for a season. I think it's common knowledge now that Omar Richards will go, but we won't be in the position where we need to sell our best assets. And that's the one worry for me next season. If we don't go up, how long can the ownership actually go without selling John Swift after all of the secrets that he's had, without selling Liam Moore, excuse me, etc. You know, players like that who have come in for strong, certainly very strong interest over the last few seasons. So yeah, we'll certainly keep those at least for a season, if not longer, and that can only stand us in good stead. And with the increase in income, we should be able to go and supplement the squad and beef the squad out significantly more than we've been able to, certainly, you know, last season. So yeah, I think we'd be in a reasonable position to at least give a good fist of trying to finish at least 17th.
Yeah, I'd agree. I think the thing is with if Reading can go up this year, and even if they do come back down, you're looking at how, I mean, Burnley have done it in the last 10 years. Norwich are doing it now. I think that's the sort of position that Reading might find themselves in, as coming down, being in a strong position, and then being able to look back up to promotion again. And it just notches the club up. You know, we don't necessarily become Premier League mainstays overnight, but being, you know, from a mid-table Championship team into a promotion constant or Premier League fighting team, it's just that notch up that I think this might give us. But alas, these are but what ifs. So if you enjoyed that chat, thank you very much for listening in. We'll be going on into the mailbag now. And let's, as I say, keep it in the present and talk about the last couple of games we've had this week.
For all the latest Reading news, analysis and opinion, visit the website at thetilehurstend.com.
Just before we do this, just a quick word on news bites, because, I mean, we're not going to do it this week because none of the women's under-23s or under-18 teams actually played. And let's do the feature. This is the feature that has set the pulses racing. If there is a what-if on what happens if this feature doesn't come into the Tilehurst End, it's a 10 out of 10 for the impact that it's had, and that is the regular art feature. Now, I've not shared this with you guys because really it's been done for us, really. Zoran Novakovic has sent us in the picture of Andy Yeardom embracing Lucas Shaw just underneath him with his hand on him. And he's related it to Christ embracing St. Bernard by Francisco Ribalta. So I'm going to put this online afterwards. And Lucas Shaw is very much the Messiah in this scenario. So I think there's a lot of merit to it. So we'll put that on the Twitter after the podcast goes live. And definitely keep sending these in, because it's a really novel feature. So let's get into the mailbag then. Laura Royal saying, our running looks tough, but this is when we play best. Discuss, and where are the goals going to come from? Why have they dried up? Now, you look around at the rest of the playoffs. We got 52 goals. That's more than Barnsley. It's more than Swansea. It's only a few less than Norwich and Watford. The goal difference indicates that it's the defence that's kind of letting us down here. But as we go into these games, Ollie, the running does look tough. I think we've got 5 games against the top 8, whereas a lot of other teams, I think Bournemouth have 2. It is kind of where we play best. And I'm actually kind of glad that we're going to have these games, because quite frankly, if we lose them all, then it would just be a sign that we do pretty rubbish in the playoffs anyway, and that we needn't even be there.
Well, I mean, that's one way of looking at it, I suppose. It's an immensely tough running. You know, we still have to play, the top 3, Norwich, Watford, Swansea. We still have to play, you know, that game against Barnsley on Good Friday is absolutely massive. And still Cardiff to play as well. So, yeah, it is an immensely tough running. But as you say, you know, we have, I suppose, the one thing you could say is we have got results against those sides before. You know, we've already beaten Cardiff and Barnsley this season. We've already beaten Watford. We've got a point against Swansea. But I think probably all of those sides are in better shape now than when we played them earlier in the season, and we're arguably in worse shape. So, yeah, it's going to be incredibly tough. It's funny you say about the defence, because, yeah, you know, looking at the numbers, you know, Reading have conceded more goals than, you know, anybody else in that top 10, I think it is. But I think Raphael has either the second or third most clean sheets in the division. So it's quite a confusing conundrum of whether we sort of tend to concede, you know, more goals in games, and then we don't tend to concede one goal in game, we tend to concede two. I don't know, but it's quite a strange one, that. But yeah, it's an incredibly tough run, and I don't particularly worry about where the goals are going to come from. I think hopefully the rest over the next 2 weeks will do Lucas Schau good. He's looked incredibly jaded and tired, I have to say, in the last couple of games. And that sort of led into frustration from his point of view, and almost led to quite a vicious cycle where he gets tired, he gets frustrated with himself, and he just misses the next chance. So, hopefully the next sort of 2 weeks off will do him good, and Reading are sort of refreshed for the final 8 games. But yeah, there is no doubt about it, we have the toughest running out of those sides going for the top 6. And I suppose the only thing now is that you hope that this is where you know Reading stand up and be counted. These are the games that really matter now, and if they do, you know, want to make a fist of this promotion and want to show themselves as promotion and playoff contenders, then these are the games they have to perform in. And yeah, you have to say, if they don't perform in these games, if they don't get results, then quite frankly, they don't deserve to be in the playoffs. So it's a massive final 8 games, and it's going to be incredibly, incredibly tense and nervous, I think.
No, I think it's a little bit of a privilege to have this sort of nervous end of the season, because we haven't had it in a good way for a little while. So that I'm kind of looking forward to in a sense. But I think with Lucas Schau, you've got to play him into form, really, haven't you? He's, as you say, he's getting into the right positions. He missed a pretty open goal with the chance to make it 2-1 against QPR. And handbags, this is the thing for me, is that against Nottingham Forest, when they sat in and played deep and were looking for the point or for the win, we didn't look particularly good. When we were at Birmingham and we got it back to 1-1, they sat in and we didn't look particularly good. When QPR, we had a bit of a spell after we made it 1-1 or around that goal. And otherwise, we didn't really look particularly good. At the very least, when we have these tough games, you know, Norwich are not going to sit in. Watford, maybe, but Swansea, yeah, you know, these are teams that are going to think we've got to go and win these games because they're fighting for top 2 and everything like that. Barnsley are going to run at us like mad. That opens up space, and I think that can play into our hands.
I think so, absolutely. When you have that time and space, it clearly stands to reason you're able to play. Perhaps you end up with that little bit of time and space more in the area. That's one of the things that I've noticed with Lucas Schau recently. Certainly, I'm not sure how long it's been since he actually scored his last goal, but he's not gone without chances, even though he has been, as Ollie rightly said, he's been very jaded. But he's been snatching at his chances recently, which just strikes to me, you know, says to me, a little bit of a loss of confidence, I think, in front of goal. Because I don't know how those penalty misses have affected him. But hopefully not much. But he has missed some gilt-edged opportunities over the last few weeks, which obviously changed the course of history. So hopefully having to play these teams and get ourselves up for playing these teams that are in and around us will play into our hands somewhat, because we have a reasonable record against teams in the sort of top six to eight, perhaps because they do come out and play a little bit more rather than sit in, as you say. It's exciting, but nervous excitement, it's got to be said.
Yeah, definitely. And I think and Alan Scott, he says, it's a good point he makes, that we have quality players. This has been proven to us through the season and through our position this year, but our mentality has gone as the season has gone on. Has Pounder got the ability to sort this before the end of the season? Otherwise, we will not make it. Sort the headspace out and we would be up. And this is perhaps something that I think mentality... It's you're dealing with humans at the end of the days, and we saw Liverpool last season were the mentality monsters, and now they're the mentality smurfs, basically. So with Reading, we saw it in the QPR game, Ollie, that the first half, whatever happened, Reading came out in the second half with a great mentality. Liam Moore had a questionable goal ruled out. Mate scores. Lucas Shaw has his chance. Just generally dominant. But then it slipped in the last 20 minutes of the QPR game. Reading just weren't the better team at all. And that's a mentality thing you would assume. But it's almost like you can't necessarily blame the players for maybe dropping off a little bit, or maybe QPR just raising their game, having gotten away with a few things. That's human nature, isn't it? It's about battling that and taking the chances when they come, rather than having to, push on for another 20 minutes, having missed all those chances.
Yeah, for sure. To be honest, those final 20 minutes against QPR, for me, you have to look at the subs. Taking Michael Olise and Lucas Shaw off seemed a bit confusing to me. Yes, they might have been tired, but we have got a 2-week break coming up. And to me, if you want to get a winning goal, then you want Michael Olise and Lucas Shaw on the pitch. So that confused me slightly, and that's probably what I would put those final 20 minutes down to. But yeah, I think mentality has been an issue really for quite some time really for Reading. Now we seem to have a lot of players who are confidence players, I suppose. Dave pointed out about Lucas Shaw. For me, he's a massive confidence player. He thrives off scoring goals, and when those goals aren't coming, he looks, his body language isn't the best. He looks a bit fed up at times. I think Michael Olise, to a certain extent, is quite similar. He thrives off playing well. I mean, that sounds obvious, I suppose, but players thriving off playing well. But certainly there seems to be a fair few players in Reading side that their heads drop quite easily when things aren't going for them. I suppose that's when you need players like Liam Moore, like Michael Morrison when he comes back. Tom McIntyre and Tom Holmes seem to have sort of come into that role quite well as well. But look, these final eight games are going to be a massive sort of mental test more than anything else for these players. They spent the last 2-3 years either battling towards the bottom end of the table or sort of mid-table last year. So it's almost a new experience for a lot of them, trying to sort of get themselves in that headspace for the playoff race. But it's going to be a massive battle. And I agree with Alan that it's going to be down to whether they can cope with that pressure, if you like, to see whether we make it or not.
It's a young squad as well, I think is worth pointing out. How many, Ovie Ajari has not had this sort of stuff before. John Swift was in 2017, but otherwise not so much. Obviously, Olise, Mate's not really been in the playoff fight before. Lucas Shaw has, I think, for Sheffield Wednesday, but it's not many players in this team have had that experience. Certainly Omar Richards hasn't, McIntyre, Holmes, etc. So I think that's going to play a big part into it. A Royal Stew saying, do you fear that Mr. Dye will lose interest soon? He has piled money in, has been frustrated. He isn't allowed to put more money in, but seen very little return. He got rid of his other football interests in Belgium and China. He owns all of our infrastructure as well now. Are you worried? I mean, a side point, I don't know. I mean, Hamad, you might know this more than me, but I thought the Thais still owned the land around the Medeski
I don't believe that's right.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not sure. Is it does Mr. Dye own the Medeski?
That's a very good question. I'm not entirely sure. I haven't looked at the ins and outs of the inner dynamics of the accounts of the club for a long time.
I know, certainly the
last I heard that the Ties owned the land around the club because as they were the ones behind the Royal Elm Park development.
Yeah, I mean, this kind of falls into the what ifs and everything we've done earlier in the episode. But for you, Bags, for in terms of the potential of the owner losing interest, I mean, in a way, because he's got rid of his other footballing interests, and I know there's a lot of politics in China around the football clubs at the moment, for us, I suppose that just kind of puts more emphasis on us and gives more focus and attention. And really, if you know, maybe this is the wrong term, but we're kind of the golden goose for Mr. Dai at the moment. We're the eggs. We're all of the eggs in the one basket.
Yeah, I think so. And certainly with you know, potential promotion to the Premier League and the riches and the everything that brings, it's significantly more lucrative than anything happening with was it Beijing Renhai is it KV Ruusulaara or however you pronounce it, the Belgian team anyway. If you get promoted to the Belgian top division, it doesn't carry with it the kudos that getting promoted to the Premier League does. So I think, certainly they're not going to lose interest anytime soon. But, you know, who knows how much patience they have.
Yeah, well, I suppose it is a what if that really only Mr. Dye can answer. And I'd love to do an interview with him, but I don't think that's going to happen anytime soon, sadly. final couple of questions then. Let's kind of whiz through these as kind of one sentence answers, because we could spend all day discussing these ones. Ben Thomas saying, at the moment in time, who is in the running for player of the year and why is it Michael Morrison? Certainly as good a candidate as any. Perhaps Liam Moore might kind of squeeze in there as, you know, the captain and everything like that. Looking around, I mean, if the funny thing is, Ollie, if Lucas Shaw would have had all of his goals now rather than at the start of the season, we'd all be saying it should be Lucas Shaw.
Yeah, I mean, you always see a bit of sort of recency bias when it comes to the player of the season vote, and perhaps that might count against Lucas Shaw. Say the fact that he's not been on the best run of form, but I still don't think you can ignore him from the equation, because you know without his goals and you know without his form in the first half of the season, and then Reading would be absolutely nowhere near where they are now. So you know Lucas Shaw has had a bigger role to play in Reading's success this season than anyone in the squad. So he'd be right up there for me. Agree with Michael Morrison. Josh Laurent has done fantastically since coming in. Fantastic. Signing on a free transfer, and being almost an ever-present apart from his injury a couple of weeks ago, and being a superb partner for Rinnemotta, and sort of really brought out the best of Rinnemotta in that holding midfield spot. So, yeah, I think the three for me would be Morrison, Zhao, and Laurent.
Yeah, well, I'd probably say Zhao just at the moment. Handbags, would you maybe give it Morrison?
Again, you can't look any further than those three players. Perhaps you can squeeze Rinnemotta in there, but yeah. For me, it's Josh Laurent, just or Laurent, however you pronounce it. So I still don't know how to pronounce his surname. I hear so many different pronunciations. it's him for me, simply because the way that he's made the step up and has just transitioned to Championship football utterly seamlessly. And has looked the part and been, you know, like Ollie said, almost an ever-present up until his recent injury. He's an absolute diamond in our midfield, an undroppable diamond.
Yeah, I think good cases can be made for all those players. Ultimately, if Lucas Shaw doesn't score a goal between now and the end of the season, he won't win it. If he scores 10 goals, I think he will win it. So that probably will be the determining factor. And final question then from Sean Burgess saying, if you had to compare our Reading FC to an animal, what would it be and why? I'll go first. A lion in a zoo is what Sean said. Looks great and sometimes it walks around and looks utterly fantastic, but a lot of the time it just lies around not moving and you're thoroughly underwhelmed. Ollie, I don't know if you've got an animal to compare the club to.
Well, I hadn't actually seen this one on the riding order, so I've got to think quickly here. I think that's a fair point. I mean, probably along sort of similar lines, you know, maybe something like a seal. again, you know, can perform tricks and, you know, can be its, you know, glistening best, I suppose, if you like, when it wants it to be. But, you know, quite a lot of the time it just sort of swims around in the water and doesn't do an awful lot. And that's probably, you know, what Reading are like at the moment compared to their glistening tricks earlier in the season.
Yeah, I'm going to take a slightly different approach, and I'm going to say a big fluffy house cat, because, you know, a lot of people have cats and a lot of people have football teams that they like, but only certain people like the big fluffy ones and, you know, the really long hair kind of mogs. And the reason that I would say that they're particularly like Reading is because, you know, a lot of people, if they have dogs or whatever, they'll look at those cats and just think, no one cares about them. But the people who do have them, they're utterly in love with it. And that's it's such an exclusive small club that a lot of people just don't understand why on earth you'd have that sort of pet, or, you know, why on earth you bother supporting such a boring team as Reading in their mind. But that's probably the way I'd go for it. Handbags, is there any changes for you?
Yeah, I'm having to think quickly on my feet here. I think I'd go with a crocodile, potentially dangerous, but generally not really doing much underwater. With the water being the financial analogy, I think.
Nice. I'd say there's some really good analogies going on there, as you say. We are all kind of thinking on our feet for that. So do send, as ever, in your questions on Facebook and Twitter and thetarlestend@gmail.com. Send in. We've got a couple of running themes. If you've got any more animals you want to compare the club to, any more what-if scenarios, do send those in. And, of course, any more artworks you want to compare the club to in any kind of way. We are feasting upon all of these different things at the moment. But let's round off this show then. We're a bit long for time now at the moment, so let's jump in and do a quick big match preview for the game in a fortnight's time.
There's another huge game ahead for the Royals, so be loud and be proud for the big match preview.
The phrase "biggest game of the season" gets bandied around fairly often. This is Reading's biggest game of the season. It's Barnsley. Barnsley away is Reading's biggest game of the season. Who saw that coming? Certainly at this end of the table, absolute massive credit that is to Barnsley. Certainly no insult to them that they've found themselves in this position. 5:30 p.m. on Sky Sports, Good Friday, April the 2nd. It is 5th versus 6th in the Championship table. And two teams, actually, funnily enough, that come into this off some pretty dodgy results. Barnsley beaten by Sheffield Wednesday on the weekend, and Reading obviously drew with QPR, having been beaten by Birmingham. So this is Barnsley 64 points, Reading 62. Bournemouth have a game in hand on 59, have better goal difference as well. This, handbags, is a game that if Reading can win it, we are walking down sunshine and rainbow avenue. If we lose it, then our season is looking suddenly very, very different.
Yeah, to an extent. This conjures memories of 1995, actually, because our playoff battle towards the end of the season was, funnily enough, again, with Barnsley. Obviously, we came out on top. But I remember going into, I think it might be late February, early March, we played Barnsley. And this was at home, and we got absolutely stuffed 3-0. So I'll take the 3-0 away win in this one. I try not to get too het up over individual results and where we are after a game in isolation, because as we know, time and successive games obviously changes that dynamic. I mean, you look where we were 7 or 8 games ago, and I was thinking about this earlier. Look where we were 7 or 8 games ago. I think we were something like 8 to 10 points clear of 7th. And that's how it's changed. And we're obviously so much closer to 7th now because of our poor run of form up until those 3 wins in a row. And so we know full well that dynamic and that can change. So, yes, in isolation, if we lose, it's not a good result. And again, if we win, it's a great result. But again, it is only 3 points, and we will only go a point above Barnsley. So there's another, how many games left after that? 7 or 8 games after that. And like I say, the situation can change based on, and will change based on the results. So yes, it's a huge game, and psychologically, whatever result you get will have a bearing on the season. But is it season defining? Is it really season defining? It's 3 points ultimately.
I don't think it's season defining, but I think one, the big thing that we can potentially do, and obviously if we win this, is you're absolutely right to say that it, in the grand scheme of things, there's still plenty of time to bodge the season after that. But the thing that we might just be able to do, Ollie, is if we can beat Barnsley, that's two defeats for them in a row. It's potentially going to, you know, they've been on an amazing run of form. It's not sustainable, as we know. Every team goes on these runs at this level of the league. And whether that is something that they can bounce back from themselves, if we can inflict a defeat on them, we might well be doing a big favour for ourselves in terms of reversing one of the other teams around us, their successive results, and sending them into a bit of a spiral.
Possibly. I mean, obviously there's the 2 week break between the games, so I think it might have had more of an impact if we'd say beaten them on Tuesday, having lost on Saturday. The fact that there's a 2 week gap between the two games perhaps sort of, you know, decreases the impact of Barnsley losing two in a row. Look, it's clear they've been on a fantastic run. You know, no one saw it coming, really. I think they were second from bottom when Valerian Ismail took over in October, and sort of the run that they've been on since. They won seven, I think it was, in a row between February and March, and then drew with Derby, and then won two more after that. So, you know, but before their defeat to Wednesday at the weekend, they'd won nine out of 10 games, which is just a remarkable record. And, you know, both them and Cardiff have been on, you know, incredible runs to sort of put them into that top six spot. But yeah, it's a game that I think it's I'm not saying it's just nice to be involved, but the fact that Reading are, you know, in these sorts of games, that we are at the business end of the season now, where, you know, these massive games are coming up, and, you know, it's the first of many. You know, as we were saying earlier, we've still got a lot of very good sides left to play, but it's going to be a fantastic occasion. You know, on Sky Sports on Easter Friday, you know, it's going to be a really, really fascinating game, and, you know, Barnsley should not be underestimated. And yeah, I can't really call which way it's going to go. You know, that Barnsley result yesterday has thrown a bit of a spanner in the works, and yes, perhaps might dent their confidence. You know, the last time they lost the game, they went on to lose the next two. They were against Norwich, Swansea, and Watford. So, yeah, we'll see. It's going to be, as I say, thoroughly, thoroughly entertaining, but very difficult to call which way it's going to go.
Yeah, you mentioned perspective, or kind of insinuated about perspective there, and I would like to have the conversation. I wouldn't like to have this conversation, because if Reading don't make the playoffs, it would be a fascinating discussion as to if you completely flipped the season around and ended with the amazing start that we had, quite how we would view the season would be very, very different, I think. But that's a discussion for another day, potentially. But for this one, predictions, you said it's very difficult to call. Out of the last week, clean sweep of failures, aside from Sim taking one all against QPR. So he's closed the gap on the leaders. He's on 19 points. Ollie, you're 21. Westy, 22. Handbags, 24. Myself, 25. So all to play for as we go into the last eight games of the season. So I'm going to go for a 2-2 draw, because both of these teams are going to come out knowing, or at least in their mind, they're going to be thinking, this is going to be a big chance to make a statement, big chance to get 3 points. And I think neither defence is impenetrable. It's Reading, 41 goals conceded, Barnsley, 42. As you said earlier, Wally, that's the worst inside the top 10. So I think there'll be goals. Handbags, what are you going to say for this one?
Yeah, there'll be goals. I'm going to go slightly more positive. I'm going to go 3-1 win. I think, after Barnsley's going into the break on the defeat, it'll burst their bubble a bit, and we'll be refreshed. And I think Lucas Shaw is going to, hopefully tear them a new one.
Ollie, what are you saying?
The 3-1 bandit returns with his handbags. I think, as I say, it's going to be tough to call, so I'm going to be a bit boring and just go for a draw. And I will say, just to be different from you, Mark, I will say 1-1.
Yeah, that was an abject failure experiment, wasn't it, that 3-1?
If you did it this season, actually, no. If you had the 1-0 Bandit this season, then you might have got somewhere with Reading this year. It's been a bit of a long show, so thanks very much for making it to the end of it. But that's going to wrap it up for us this week. And for the international break, we've actually got quite a decent amount of content coming over the international break. So do not avert your eyes. All kinds of good stuff hopefully going on over the next couple of weeks on the Tyler Sten podcast and the website. But for now, we'll let you go. And thanks very much, Handbags, for popping on this week.
No worries. Been a pleasure.
Good to be. And Ollie as well.
No worries. Thanks very much. Yeah, it's been great fun having a little trip down memory lane.
Absolutely. And as I say, for the international break, we've got all kinds of good things coming up on the website and on the podcast. Hopefully you'll join us for that. Thank you very much for listening into a bit of a different episode. Apologies if you were hoping for the classic in-depth analysis that we've been giving you over the course of the season of what ultimately I just found to be two games not worth dwelling on, basically. But that said, we have got some games coming up that are going to be absolutely worth dwelling on no matter what happens. As I say, Good Friday, 5:30 p.m, Barnsley away. Then on the Monday, we have Derby at home. We'll be back probably on the evening of that Derby game to talk about what's been going on over the Easter weekend. Let's hope it's one that can revive Reading's playoff push. God, that was a terrible analogy. I'm sorry. Come on, you ass.
Starting to see, kissing out the